Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Allison in Wonderland Mental Health Podcast. I am so excited about our guest today, and we've got some really great points to go over with a really amazing topic. But as you know, I love to do, I'm going to have Lisa introduce herself, let us know a little bit about who she is as a person and why this topic that we're going into is so important to her. So Lisa, welcome to Allison in Wonderland.
Thank you, Allison. I'm happy to be here. So my name is Lisa Ford. And basically, as far as my credentials go, I was a teacher, I was a school counselor, I was a director of student services, and I'm now a therapist. So I have quite a lot of background when it comes to the credential aspect of it. And now I am creating my own company in which I'm helping parents and I'm doing community outreach about mental health and learning disabilities and bridging the two and understanding mislearning gaps and a lot of that stuff. So that's who I am on paper. Who I am in real life is I am a mom of three teens. Actually, one is now going to be 21. So I guess I can't say that anymore. I had a very strong mental health background in myself. I was raised by a paranoid, bipolar, schizophrenic father, and I had to overcome a lot of mental health challenges within myself. I was in a toxic relationship in which I had to leave, and I battle, you know, some situations within my own household of some of my children struggling with some mental health concerns. So that's who I am in a nutshell.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like so many, I mean, I can relate to a lot of what you said. I think that a lot of the listeners can as well. And I also have a 21 and a 22-year-old, and I still refer to them as my teens. Yes. I don't know at what point they'll stop being considered my teenagers.
Mom, I'm not a teen anymore.
I know. It's great. But it's a lot of great experience. And also coming from a home of mental illness where my mother was bipolar and a pathological liar. And I also later found out that my brother was also suffered with bipolar disorder. Mm-hmm. I think that one, you know, I also ended up in some toxic relationships because where have you seen a healthy one? And two, I've always tried to be very mindful about the mental health of my children, you know, because I lost my brother and my mother as a result of suicide. So I think I almost over, you know, complicated things where I'd be on with my therapist and be like, oh my God, they did this. Are they bipolar? You know what I mean? So it's, I think it's definitely a really important topic to kind of let people know, what to look out for, how to, you know, how every child really is different. People are like, oh, I love my kids all the same. I treat them all the same. Everybody's different. You can't have the same relationship with any of your children because they're all going to be so different. And that doesn't mean that you're treating one better or worse. You're meeting them as the person that they are. So I think that that's all really, really amazing. And then the topic of this call is there's always a cause behind the effect. Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about that. There's always a why. There's always a cause.
So we see behavioral displays. You can see, you know, that there's some sort of spinning out of control. There's some sort of imploding something. There is always a source of pain behind it, whether it is someone turns to addiction, starts to, you know, flip out in a way, whether or not someone starts to feel like they're not themselves. There's always a source of pain. So coping skills are when we're struggling with that pain, we find a way of coping. Finding a way of coping with that pain is not always a positive thing because you want whatever way you can to cope with it. And sometimes it becomes self-implosive. Sometimes it becomes like, so we have four ways of avoiding trauma. It's fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. So when you're fighting, you're just trying to fight against the world. You're finding a way to, you know, fight back with what you're dealing with. When you're flighting, you are running away from something. You are not dealing with it. You are avoiding it. You're doing whatever you can to not deal with it. When you are freezing, you're in this state of frozen, like, roboticness or something where you just don't want to deal with it. That's where like repression, you don't want to think about it, or avoidance and things like that. That is where you're frozen. And then when you're fawn, you become the people pleaser. You want to do everything, make people happy, do everything you can. You sacrifice yourself. You don't understand your own boundaries, all of those things. So those are the four areas that we go to when we're creating coping skills. So when we talk about there's always a cause, you know, behind, there's always an effect behind the cause. I'm sorry, always a cause behind the effect. It has to do with those four things. And it's understanding which one of those four things we're showing as the effect, and then kind of going underneath those effects and finding the cause.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. And I think it's also interesting to know that, like, in different situations, the same person will have a different reaction. I definitely see how, after the loss of my brother, I fell into that people pleasing. I tried to take care of the entire family, but did not right. take care of myself.
Right.
But then where it comes to like my children, I go to instant fight mode where I am like
mama bear,
right? Like I am a force to be reckoned with. Mm-hmm. So it's like very difficult. And then also kind of the free state where, you know, there is like repressed childhood trauma and things that it's just like for my entire adult life where I've been a mom, you can't really address those issues because you don't want to fall apart. So you just kind of keep them tucked away where they're, you know, put up on the shelf for a little while. And I think that it's kind of interesting too, like thinking about how both of us came from childhoods where there was mental illness. And they always talk about how, you know, children from homes with mental illness are able to read a room faster mm-hmm. than anyone else, because you got to walk in and know, is this a day where my mom is going to take us on some random shopping spree that we can't afford, or the day where she's going to tackle my brother with a butcher knife? Where are we at on the scale
that was
here?
That was my father, but I was there with you.
Yes, exactly. And so I think a lot of people with that, you know, learn to do that, end up in some type of mental health arena when they get older, because like they've mm-hmm. already learned how to, you know, witness what's going on with someone, empathize, read the room, mm-hmm. Which it's terrible that we go through those things. But it's also good that there are people that can see that there's maybe a little bit more going on than what someone's trying to say on the surface.
Without a doubt. And that's why my form of therapy is a little different than some of the other, like, I don't do like the old man on the couch type thing where it's just all up in my head and I'm psychoanalyzing. I mean, I psychoanalyze because that's what I have to do, but I prefer with psychoeducation. That's what I call it, where I basically work with my clients to say, this is what's going on with you. This is why you're seeing, can you see this pattern? Do you understand this? Do you understand that this is the learning pattern that you're creating, or the coping skill that you've adapted, or the direction, or the continuous thing that you're doing over and over again, and bring it to their attention? And then I kind of say, okay, we see this. Do you like this? Do you not like this? So what can we do? What can we do to change this? You know, so yeah. I'm very big on psychoeducation. I'm also a former English teacher, so I'm huge on books. So I'm always like saying, read this book, watch this TED talk, do this, that, because I feel like I don't want to be the source of like, this is where you are. I want someone to do their own research to understand where they are, just like we're doing. This is what we're doing. We're researching what we came from, why we are the way we are, and what we can do to sort of unravel the things that we learned. And I think one of the big things we do once we unravel ourselves is we want to do outreach and empowerment of others. Like you said, you want to work on empowering others. And I'm actually looking on empowering communities and organizations and families and parents. So I think it's that same idea.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I mean, it really is so true, where a lot of people are like, you know, when they look at children, I've had teachers that when my kids were growing up, I've had some amazing teachers for them, and I've had some terrible ones where it is, it where I'm almost was like, before it was easy to homeschool your kids, and when I didn't want to isolate them, I still thought about ripping one of my kids out of school just because the experience. I left, you know, meetings with teachers, you know, when from with a child that was a first grader, where they left me crying at the end of it because they, you know, the teacher literally sent my children to the playground after school hours without asking me if it was okay if they went and played on the playground. And I have serious trust issues of other humans, so I would have never done that. And then like immediately was just like very animated, your child drives me crazy. And I'm just sitting there thinking, how am I sending him to this person every day? And I left crying. And they then pushed me into an IEP process where
and they you probably had no clue what was going on.
They said that he had a learning disability, that he had dyslexia, he had speech issues. So he ended up with the speech teacher. And that was a thing. It was interesting because my oldest had such a large vocabulary at a very young age that I asked about his speech issues from a pediatrician. And he said, he just knows bigger words than he should. So it sounds like there are speech issues, but it did end up being a speech problem. And then your younger children learn so much from your older children. So they both ended up in speech therapy in elementary school. It was because you don't know.
Interesting how philosophies and ages and generations
have changed in like 20. Yeah.
Differently. Yeah. I had a doctor who told me you can't put your daughter on ADHD medicine. It's just speed. It's just a stimulant. You're just, you know, and I'm like, my daughter can't focus, you know, and it's interesting how people perceive things in a different way.
When I was a kid, everybody was getting put on ADHD medicine. If you misbehaved in class, you immediately had ADHD and they were giving you, and everybody was on Ritalin. It was definitely.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. When I was a kid, and I'm probably older than you, I don't know, maybe we're around the same. I don't know.
I mean, our kids are about the same age. We're probably around the same age.
When I was a kid, you had the bad kid classes and then you had smart kid classes. Mm-hmm. And the bad kid classes were instantly, the kids were always getting in trouble, this and that. Learning disabilities were not a thing. You instantly knew who was having a problem in their house, and this one had this father, or this one had this, and this one had that. It was a horrible thing to but they never looked at a person's capability. They never looked at like where the strengths are and where the weaknesses are. It was like you were separated, like you belong in this cage, you belong in this cage, you know, and, thankfully, we've moved a lot away from that.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, with the good teachers that we've had over the years, you could tell where, yes, they're all very restrained to like this curriculum that they have to follow and these things that they have to do. But you could tell where they saw the students or the kids as people with different personalities, where like one of my kids that would go from having teachers that loved him to teachers that hated him. He just had so much personality. And I look back at it and I'm like, did I screw my kid up where, you know, he'd be two at Cracker Barrel coloring on the menu and someone would be like, oh, you need to color in the lines. And I'm like,
color inside the lines, right?
And I would say, and I'd be like, no, he can color outside the lines. He can create his own lines. He doesn't have to color in the lines. But so that's how I raised him. And then he gets to kindergarten and they're like, he doesn't even know how to color in the lines. And I'm like, oops.
Yeah, we're kind of damned if we do, damned if we don't as parents, right? It's like you either create this like, you're overprotective and this person has to be so like in the lines that they become like anxiety prone, or you teach them to draw outside of, they become this eclectic person. And then they're sort of like isolated by society. You know, it's just.
Right. Yeah. It's definitely very interesting how that happens. But right. I mean, like, I know that we had talked a little before the call about how you kind of help as a parent advocate when it comes to the IEPs and the 504s. And I've been through both of those processes. And when we transferred school with my child that had been forced into an IEP, they then put him into a class that was for people with learning disabilities. And he was getting so frustrated with the children in the classroom. And they also had all been in first grade together and moved all, like even the teacher moved to second grade. So he was the odd person out. He did not actually have a learning disability. And he would get so frustrated that they said he'd go on bathroom breaks all the time. And what they realized was he was just walking around the school. So they did
it to decompress probably. His brain was just going and going.
It was just too much going on in the classroom. And so then he was also struggling with work because, you know, he was not where he should have been.
Right.
And it took a long time to get him out of the IEP. It took the whole school year, but we did come up with a thing where at least the teachers, you know, we met with the IEP meeting and they were like, well, if he needs this time, instead of lying and saying he needs to go to the bathroom, he can have like one pass a day to go walk around the hall.
Hold on a minute, Allison, my computer's doing a little
okay.
You know, technology works great when it works. Okay, I'm good.
Oh, yeah, I know. So, I mean, it's a really difficult process. And then when he got into high school and we were learning from home with COVID, I then had to go through testing to get him on a 504 for his ADD so that he could have extended time on things.
Right.
And really, it wasn't even so much about extended time. He needed to listen to music. This was actually pre-COVID and then went into it.
I have a daughter like that. Yeah.
He needed to listen to music and he was not allowed to have his phone or his earbuds in during schoolwork. And so he did get like the whole extended time on test, but he never used that. But the main reason for the 504 where I had to take him to a therapist office and have him do all this testing and stuff was to allow him to listen to his earbuds to drown everyone else out.
That is his way of learning. And the thing that drives me crazy as an educator is that we are taught to learn differentiated learning. We are taught to learn Gardner's multiple intelligences, and both of which basically say that there are different ways in which students learn. And we need to understand which way that student is learning and meet that student where they're learning. And if we're not paying attention to where that student is learning most successfully, they're not going to meet their maximum potential. Now, the hard thing, and I know this, I know any educator listening to this is going to say, are you kidding me? I've got 30 some kids in this class and I've got-
And like, I'm allowed to do these certain rules.
Right, I've got like 15 IEPs, 504s. I've got this standard of learning that I've got to meet. I've got this, that, and that is the hard part in itself because- The educator, I mean, and that's why so many people left education. And that's
this mass exodus that we've seen recently. Yeah.
It's because everyone wants to blame the educator. And the educator is making not great money, quite honestly. And I don't even want to hear that they're off in the summers, because if you see all that they deal with in the winters, you'll understand.
And I've also seen these teachers off in the summers as waiters at the restaurants we go to. Like,
exactly.
Like summers only really helps if their kids are also off at the summers and they're not having to pay for daycare because of the summer. Like that's.
And one thing to understand is when they're off in the summers, 10% of each paycheck is going to a summer thing.
Yeah.
Throughout the year. So I'm just going to, you know, support my teachers in that way. So understanding that, but with the idea that teachers are trying to do everything they can, educators are trying to do everything, but the schools are just, they're so overwhelmed that they can't meet all of these needs. So there's gotta be this mental health initiatives that they put in schools. It needs to be separated. When I was a school counselor and they wanted me to focus specifically on their post-secondary needs and their career advisement needs. And then in addition to that, I dealt with the mental health breakdown of all of these kids and the confidentiality in the sense that I could not tell the parents not tell the teachers what I was dealing with.
Yeah.
FERPA is the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, which is basically a HIPAA in schools. So I can't tell someone if a child's being abused. I can't tell someone if a child's dealing with, you know, a bipolar parent or an alcoholic parent or this or that. And when I have a teacher coming to me and saying, they've got a D in my class, they're not doing homework, I can't say there's no electric home at that house. That kid's taking care of five of their siblings while the parents out, you know, doing drugs down the corner. All of those things are separate. So when I actually left education, I was just so burned out by the fact that I was dealing with so much mental health stuff. And then I had my own daughter who had a mental health situation, and I had to focus on the post-secondary and the career advisement and all of that stuff and not paying attention to the mental health. So the mental health initiative needs to get stronger. We are in a state of crisis. The government corruption, you know, the economy, all of everything, we're all struggling with our mental health. So the idea of saying that mental health just stays in the family, that, you know, your skeletons stay in the closet. I joked around with a couple of different podcasts and I said, I don't want to keep the skeletons in the closet. I want to take them out and make them dance.
Right. Yeah.
It shouldn't be there. It should be when you are dealing with one in five individuals and one in six individuals who have diagnosed mental health situations, that's just diagnosed and what we know about in our world, then it shouldn't be that we make this seem like it's such a weird thing. And then you're talking about the mental health piece of it. Then that's the mental health piece of it. Then there's a whole nother piece, the learning disability piece that we talked about. Does the kid have ADHD? Does the kid have some sort of a brain issue that's going on? Is there dyslexia? Is there dyscalculia? Is there dysgraphia? I mean, so many different pieces of that. And so what I'm seeing in my 20-some-year-old clients is they're just giving up. They're automatically not thinking about a career. They're automatically thinking they can barely walk out of the house and barely go into a place without having an anxiety attack. It's hysterical. So, but this whole thing that we're all dealing with some mental health piece, whether it's the idea that we feel overwhelmed or we feel anxious or we feel stuck or we feel not good enough or we feel confused or we feel something, we feel. It comes from the fact that we feel. And feeling is something that needs to be felt. I have a client who said to me the other day, "Miss Lisa, I'm crying a lot and I feel embarrassed because I'm crying." And one of my favorite movies for mental health is Inside Out. Any parents on there who have not showed this to your kid, I don't care what age they are, they should see that movie because it's basically about the importance of emotions and how it controls a person. And they tried to keep sadness out of it. They wouldn't put sadness there because they didn't want to see the crying. And when they didn't have sadness, all the world kept collapsing. The kid was just going, you know, into this like behavioral spin. Finally, they pushed sadness out there. The tears came and the world started to rebuild. Why? Because crying is cleansing. Crying is cleansing. And if we understand, I mean, we don't want to cry continuously, but we're holding some source of pain inside. And our brain is like a container. It gets so overwhelmed. We don't know how to deal with it. We don't know how to get the stuff out. When you cry, you are cleansing your body. You are cleansing your brain and you are able to retake information back into your brain and you're able to move on. It's a regroup. So crying, I don't want to hear anymore that crying is for babies and crying is cleansing.
Or boys shouldn't cry and exactly. Things like that. Yeah. And yeah, I think also what's really interesting about that movie is it's not just that they're trying to push sadness behind, they're trying to keep joy as the number one emotion.
Number one. People pleasing.
Right. And like and I think that even outwardly, like, yes, that's going on inwardly, but other people want you to show your joy. It's why you can be grieving someone and they'll be like, "How are you doing?" Well, they don't want a real answer because obviously
they just want you to say, "I'm fine.
I'm fine." You know, everyone just expects like it to be normal, not like, right. Hey, what's been going on with you? Or how, you know, have you been able to get enough food while you're going through this? Is, you know, can I come do your laundry? Don't ask how they're doing. Just assume that they're not doing great. Like,
If you ask a person, "How are you?" And when I was an English teacher, someone would say, "How are you?" And instead of saying, "I'm doing fine" or something, I would say something else. And they'd say, "You know, well, you know, you're supposed to answer according to your health." And I said, "Well, I don't answer according to my health. I answer according to my disposition," because I think that's where I'm supposed to answer.
Yeah. And I think that what's really interesting too is like, even with all of that, like every child is different. And you have three kids, I have three kids, and I can tell
Very
you
different.
they're all very, very different. And they all have different mental health needs, and they all have, different interests and personalities to nurture. So if you have 30 in a classroom, teachers need to meet the kids educationally, but how do parents like really educate themselves on how to meet their kids where they're at? Like you mentioned, the doctor didn't want your daughter to take AD medicine because it was speed. Well, I know we mentioned before the call, I'm like, we're going to end up all over the place because of my ADD.
And
But
I said, I'm right there with you.
I've spent decades turning myself into having these structures that work for me with my ADD. How in the world could we expect a 12-year-old to do this? It's been many years of figuring out how I can function with my ADD. But what do the parents do? What do they look for?
Well, I think parents need to research them and find, they need to educate themselves. And that's one of the biggest reasons why I'm trying to do what I want to do. And I want to work mainly with parents and with schools and organizations because of the sense that I think we need to understand that this is not just an individual problem, it's a community problem. It takes a village. That old idea that we have to, not only focus on just my child, but your child and her child, and stop getting to the place where it's just this kid's an entity, this kid's a that. I mean, when my daughter went through mental health issues, some of the parents just totally disconnected with her. Oh, she's the bad kid now. She's the bad kid. We're not going to do that, And automatically, she's not going to be successful. So we don't want to have her around my kid, And okay, so you never had a problem with your kid? Because I totally remember this child having a problem. And you said you have three, the person I'm referring to had three, and all of our kids are different. We meet them at a different point, And whereas one of my children is completely rational and logical and going in to be a,
I have one of those too.
yes, she's actually going to be a psychiatric physician assistant. So that's a really cool thing, to tell
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah.
Then I have another one who is loyal to a core, sweet as can be, people pleasing, but amazing with kids. And then I have another one who's the funny one, but since day one, he's, been gifted and just automatically has been preparing for career in engineering. It's just everything comes easy to him, but they're all different. And
Yeah.
those are just my kids. Your kids are different and your kids are different. And it's hard because educators are expected to do that. And parents are expected, like educators and parents need to sort of work together. Community organizations need to come together. And we need to understand that there's a connection between the two. We need to stop putting psychological problems in this box where, I mean, I don't know how your grandparents were, but my grandparents' generation, my parents' generation, they just locked them away.
Yeah.
Locked them away.
Well, and even if
No
something
problem.
happened, I remember being told not to talk about things.
Exactly.
We don't talk about these
Culturally.
things. And I remember we would get in so much more trouble if we misbehaved in public than if we could be like trying to murder each other at home and it
Don't
wouldn't
do it
be a
where
big,
someone sees it.
right. But if we misbehaved in public, we'd get that awful pinch that no one could see while you're screaming, but like you've misbehaved in public and you're supposed to be perfect because that's a reflection of their parenting and it's how people
Absolutely.
perceive them as how your kids act. And then I remember even when like my kids were babies, I would always feel so self-conscious about them crying in a restaurant that I would immediately get up and go like sit in the car with them or walk them around. And then as I've gotten older and I've seen other people's kids cry in restaurants, I'm like, it's a baby. We're in a restaurant. If you're in a restaurant that has menus with crayons, you should expect babies crying. Like it's just that's just one of those things. If you go to one that's some fancy, $200 a meal plate, then
You
maybe you can
probably
be a
shouldn't be bringing a baby there,
right.
honestly,
Maybe you
but
can be a little bit more snobbish about that night out. But if they have menus with crayons and serve mac and cheese.
They're there for a reason. Absolutely. Hot dogs, mac and cheese, you know, chicken fingers.
Chicken nuggets. Yeah.
Kids eat the same stuff all the time, you know, but yeah, 100%. And it's really sad that kids have to feel like freaks 24/7. You know,
yeah.
I see so many clients, and one of the biggest things they have difficulties with is their self-esteem and their self-image and the fact that people judge them and people think they're different and people this and that, you know. And growing up, I remember my dad was well known in the neighborhood. He had an obsession with Elvis Presley, and I was Elvis's daughter, and I was hurt and I was cut and I was, you know, made fun of, and I was all sorts of stuff because I was Elvis's daughter, you know, and I was known as being the freak because everything stays in the house, but when it comes out of the house and they see it, then it's like, ooh, you know, then that's really a person you want to stay away from.
Yeah.
So we need to understand the importance of mental health initiatives at this point in time. That's the biggest thing.
I think another thing about just schools in general is this idea that everyone needs college education. So we used to teach kids trades.
That's another one.
Mm-hmm. So why aren't we teaching kids trades and life skills and things that are not going to require $100,000 of student loan debt? And then as soon as the job market crashes, no jobs. And then don't have the skill to be a mechanic, and they don't have the skill to go work on air conditioners. Right. And it's almost like I remember when my kids were graduating, every single year they would be like, 99% of our school students are going on to a university or joining the military. And it was like, why is this like the big thing? Like, who's going to fix my air conditioner?
Right. And they're making so much money because of it, you know.
And they're also not drowning in student loan debt. And I also feel like that the health classes are missing a mark. So I know the health classes when I was in school really missed the mark. I lived in the Bible Belt. Abstinence was the sex education that we got. Like that was it. I did not understand anything about, you know, I was 19 when I had my son, and I was 19 when I was pregnant with him, but I didn't know anything. You know what I mean? Like I didn't understand anything about, like I understood I understood those things.
Yeah.
But I didn't understand anything about the female body and what it goes through and anything about postpartum depression. And there's this whole mental health section of health that needs to also be education in the schools.
Well,
curriculum.
Is a part of the body.
Right.
The mind is a part of the body. And I'm recognizing that. I'll tell you one thing that I really have a hard time with. We both have the ADHD. We're going everywhere.
I told you it would happen.
The one thing I have a problem with is with IEPs, when they put a diagnosis in there and they give our kids help, it goes under emotional disturbance for anything that you deal with mental health, emotional disturbance. I'm always fighting. I'm like, no, it's emotional support.
I had no idea. Oh my goodness.
The connotation that goes with the word disturbed and disturbance. So you put in their IEP emotional disturbance. So that means they get, you know, their accommodations, they get the modifications. That means they get the extra time. But when you call a child disturbed, think of that 1950s, 1930s, you know, mentality. That same thing of how women were the
hysterical. Yes, oh my gosh.
Exactly,
and could just be put in a mental institution if their husband decided they were hysterical. I get on that a lot.
I just did a TikTok about the fact that of gaslighting. And, you know, like if you look at the origin of where it came from like a 1920s play of where a man just sort of let, I guess that's where electricity was. They would let it go a little bit at a time with the light bulb, and it would come out and the gas would start to leak. And the wife was like, there's something going on. No. It's just in your head. So it was like, that's where gaslighting comes from. So that idea that you're feeling something, someone's invalidating it because it's just in your head. So then it makes you feel even more crazy. You know, it makes you feel like your mental health is completely up. And then what happens? You start backing into yourself. You don't set the boundaries. You feel invalidated. You know, all of those things are what happens. So why does it have to be that way? Why does it have to be that you have to make me feel a certain way because I am struggling with this or I am struggling with that? If I am ADHD, if I have bipolar, if I have this, if I have that, that's something that is part of me, just like cancer, just like diabetes, just like anything about it. And we should not be made to feel so embarrassed about who we are simply because it's something of our makeup.
Right. Absolutely. You know? I agree completely. I've always used the example, even before everyone started talking about gaslighting, where I was like, you know I have a sister that lives in California. I know it. But if I woke up in a mental hospital tomorrow and they tell me that I've imagined her, that she's not real, that I was seeing and hearing voices, at first I would fight it. Mm-hmm. And then they would keep telling me and they would medicate me and they would keep telling me and keep telling me. And eventually I would probably give in and be like, wow, I just created this whole person. Right. And if you think about that, it, you know, on a smaller scale, it happens so much, but I always use it as this big drastic, like I grew up with this person. They've been in my life, you know, since I was two, I know, like tied to my entire life, but then like somehow they make you believe, actually, no, you're the crazy one. This is crazy. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's always been kind of my way of explaining that, of like, if you're told you're crazy enough, eventually you're going to listen to people and you're going to believe them.
You're going to believe it. And instead of being allowed to have boundaries, instead of being allowed to be validated, instead of being allowed to have your own eccentricity, and instead of being allowed to have your own diagnosis, you're made to seem like you're some kind of weirdo. I mean, like when my clients come in and they don't want to take medication or they don't want to go to therapy, I'm like, if your car is not running right and you don't put oil in your car, you don't put antifreeze in your car, you don't get your tires, you know, pumped up, you don't do it. Does your car run the way it's supposed to run? Well, we're machines. We're the exact same way. And if we don't take care of our bodies, ourself, our brain, which is a part of all of it, it works the same way. It breaks down. Our mind starts to break down our body. Our body starts to break down our mind.
Yeah.
And when that happens, we don't succeed in the same way. We don't thrive in the same way. We don't grow in the same way. And a lot of times we look for ways to numb that pain and we look for ways to sort of cope with that situation. And unless we have the support that we need to find it in a positive way, we often find it in a very negative way.
And that's when we self-medicate. But it took me years to realize that the fat shame that I felt was because of an addiction that I have, where I have disordered eating and I binge. Right. And it took me, and I still do it. It's so funny. I'll tell people, like, they're like, oh, well, you've lost all this weight and you know, you fixed yourself. And I'm like, no, instead of eating a massive bag, like family size bag of Reese cups, I eat half a box of sugar-free popsicles a day. You wouldn't believe my deep freeze. Like, we went to the store yesterday and bought all of the sugar-free popsicles they have because I eat half a box of them a day because I still do that. I've just tried to shift, you know, as I'm still working on this thing, because it's, you know, it took me a long time to even realize that was the issue. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm still working on it, but I've at least tried to shift the habits some. But it's really one of those things where, yeah, just being able to accept that, hey, we have these things, and how now let's not like brush them under the rug. Let's see how we meet each other, meet our kids, meet them there, be honest about our own mental health with our children, so they don't feel 100%.
Shame. And that's why psychoeducation, I don't know, you know, it exists, but like, that's my big push. Because I guess as an educator, that's my whole nature. You know, I was an educator all my life, and obviously psychology has been a big part of it. I think the biggest thing is understanding why. And that's when I talk about psychology, it's the study of the mind. When you talk about education, it's learning, it's building awareness. It's connecting the two. The more we understand who we are, where we come from, how we operate, how we need to be, the guidelines that we need to create, the boundaries that we need to create, what invalidates us, what's important to us, the more we can succeed and then help another person to become empowered by our success or our learning to then do it for themselves and, you know, pay it forward.
Yeah, I think it's so, so true. And I talked to someone else that kind of, that helps people go through the IEP process and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I just remember thinking, wow, if I had known, I mean, because once again, I was a very young mother and we didn't have everything on the interwebs that we have now. Right. My friends
we didn't even have the internet when I was a kid.
Right. My siblings weren't having babies yet. I mean, my siblings still have babies. I'm like empty nesting and they have babies. So like it's very different. I have friends that I grew up with that are having babies now with their second husbands and things like that. So I'm in a very different life phase from most people. And I have been my entire life. I've always been in a different life phase. There weren't those resources, and knowing that there could be, that's really amazing. We talked a little bit before about early detection, and I don't think we talked about it here, but so you want to educate the parents, but at the same time, if it's not detected by the school, mm-hmm. how do the parents know they need to be educated? Like that's it's
very hard. So there is a behavioral display that shows that there's something off. So if your child is crying a lot, if your child is not socializing with their peers, if your child is acting out, and I'll tell you with boys, that's the biggest thing. They start getting angry, really angry, and like slamming things and
punching walls.
Right. And that's where oppositional defiant disorder starts coming in. You know, when that diagnosis comes in, it is understanding that there's a source of pain. And the source of pain is the main thing you want to look at. What is causing my child pain? Is it the learning disability? Is that they're not learning the way they need to? Is it that there's a trauma that they're dealing with? Is there some sort of disconnect in their brain? Is there some sort of disconnect in their social group? Is there something in my home that's causing problems? It's understanding my child is in pain. It's my job as an investigator to figure out what it is. And the educator, it's pretty much the same. And that's the hard thing but the educator has a team of people. When you are a teacher and you see this stuff going on, refer to a counselor. Counselor, when you see the stuff going on, if you can't do it, refer to the school-based therapist who then comes into the school, help with the school-based therapist. When the school-based therapist sees that there's too much, refer to a mobile therapist. If the mobile therapist sees there's too much, look into inpatient, look into outpatient, look into partial. Educate yourself as to all the things that are going on. If you are a therapist and you're seeing all this going on and you see that the child or an adult or whoever it is just not getting it all, look and see if there's a learning disability, you know, attached to it. It's looking at the fact that there is an effect for every cause and a cause for every effect. And the source is always pain. There's always some source of pain behind it. And the more we avoid that pain and avoid that source, and the more we don't discover what's going on with that, the more the person starts to implode, self-numb, look for ways to cope. And that's where things get even worse. Where addiction comes into place. That's where anger comes into place. That's where crime comes into place. That's where all sorts of things come into place. You detect that. And the more you understand what you're dealing with and then educate yourself. And this is one of the big things I try to do is work with parents to understand this is your child's learning disability. This is your child's mental health disorder. So this is where they're at. If they have a 78 IQ, or they have a 66 IQ, going to an Ivy League college is not going to be in their future. It's just not. You know, when we were talking about the fact that you said, you know, looking at everyone going to college versus everyone not going to college, when I was interviewed, I'll never forget, as the post-secondary counselor, hired as the senior counselor, whatever. And the woman said to me, the principal said to me, can you ensure that every one of these kids will go to college? And I said, Absolutely not. I will not insure that. But what I will insure you is that every single one of these kids will have a post-secondary plan that fits their needs and what they need, you know, their expectations. Yeah. Now, I have to be honest, there were plenty of kids who were not ready for that. I would call kids down and talk to them to their blue in their face, and they'd be like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Okay, you don't know. So guess what? We're just going to get you at a place where you can figure it out. You can succeed enough. You can work enough. You can take a gap year enough. You can do whatever you need to do to just sort of move your transition into adulthood and figure it out. If right. you don't know at the age of 17 what you want to do for the rest of your life, that's okay. But you do need to
have... I think I didn't figure it out until the age of 40. Seriously. Like,
I'm in my 40s now. I moved from teaching to school counseling to, you know, being a director to now I'm a therapist. Now I'm moving into being an entrepreneur, parent advocate, community outreach.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. That's been my journey as well. So
I
mean,
I'll probably have a podcast eventually. Who the heck knows? But the end result is do something to discover who you are on your own terms. And if you are a parent, help your child to figure out who they are on their own terms. You cannot put your expectations as to what you want your child to be on them. You have to allow them to be who they are. And if you are a teacher and you see that this person is not succeeding in your classroom, don't ignore it. If you don't have time to deal with it, refer it to the person who does. Refer it to that person. Refer it to that. Now, there's a mental health crisis. There's a major crisis going on in general. Education is a complete uproar. Yes, there's a shortage of everything. I understand that. And people are going to wait 5-7 days for beds and wait months to see a mobile therapist, whatever it may be. That's just the way it works right now. But don't give up. You are your child's best advocate. And if you are not advocating for your child, then who is? And as a teacher and a counselor and all of that, it's still your job to advocate for that child. And if you can't do it, you refer. Don't just give up.
Yeah, I think that it's really important. And it goes back to that. It takes a village, because mm-hmm. the teacher that's super frustrated with the child may need a different teacher or a different person to kind of give them some perspective, because they're frustrated. It's that, right. that teacher that, right. you know, pulls me aside and is like, your child's driving me crazy. Mm-hmm. Maybe there should have been another teacher that, you know, it watched my kid interact with other kids and watched how they were, that wasn't constantly on a daily basis getting mad at my child, because she wasn't the one to, she should not have been the one to instigate this IEP process that said that he was dyslexic and all of these things took us a couple of years to really get fixed. So like, it's definitely one of those things where sometimes you got to step back and
But if I could advocate for those teachers, just like we're talking about keeping the skeletons in our house and keeping them locked away, it's the same thing with teachers. Teachers are evaluated on the growth of the child's learning. Are you teaching my child to the best ability? Well, guess what? That shouldn't always be the focus. When I was evaluated, they were looking at my SGOs, which is my student growth objectives. They started here. Are they moving here? They started here. They didn't look at the fact that I was there till 6 o'clock at night with cereal bars in my drawer because kids were coming in hungry and didn't have that. They didn't look at the fact that I worked in an urban inner city environment and kids were all in my room during lunch periods because they didn't want to go downstairs and they didn't want to deal with fights and they didn't want to deal with social pressures and they wanted to have a place of safety. They didn't deal with that. They didn't focus on that. So just like we're talking about having the, you know, bring the skeletons out of our closet in our homes, you also need to understand in schools that mental health is a big piece of that. Professional development, absolutely. And that's one of the things I want to do. Professional developments absolutely need to bring in mental health initiatives, because teachers need to understand what that's about. Administrators need to understand hammering down on teachers so hard to do everything they have to do in their SGOs and their standards of learning and all of that stuff, and not paying attention to the kid crying in the corner, is not the way we're going to get these kids to succeed, and not the way that you're going to rebuild education. Because education used to be fun in the sense that we used to love making our kids want to learn and bring happiness to the classroom. And when it's all about, all we want to do is hammer down on them, and the kids are unhappy and the teachers are unhappy and the administrators are unhappy and everything's going around, that's not okay. It's okay to be who you are. It's okay to have fun. It's okay to have different ways of doing things. We need to allow the world to get back to the melting pot that it once was, that we all can be who we are.
Exactly. And when you think about all of the people that were the great innovators in history, they were the ones, the teachers were like, hey, your child can't learn. He's an idiot. And it was just that they thought in a different way. Yeah. There's a lot of them that have had dyslexia because I researched
Oprah it. Oprah has dyslexia.
Really? Yeah. Oprah. So like, right. I've always thought that I was just terrible at math, but I've got the dyscalculia. And so like, I can crush it with a spreadsheet though. I understand numbers, but I am just have always been really terrible at the way you have to do math. And it would just be simple, stupid things. So
I have a learning disability with math, but I have a master's, post-master's. I'm doing all. So what? That doesn't define me.
Right.
You know, versus my weaknesses.
Yeah. I always tell people I'm the accidental high school dropout that has 3 degrees.
I'm a dingbat. I do the dumbest of dumb things. And anyone who knows me will tell you that, but I'm also very smart, you know?
Yeah.
So, and everyone is the same. We have our strengths and our weaknesses. You don't need to be so embarrassed about your weaknesses. You don't need to feel so bad about you are. So what if I'm a dingbat? I'm a dingbat who's also multi-educated and can help you and your child to succeed.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is like just really knowing our strengths, helping our kids learn theirs instead of only focusing on weaknesses. I think that that's really great. So is there anything that we didn't cover today? Because I have a feeling you and I could talk for forever.
I think that we have to be close friends because you're just amazing. I think that what you're doing is incredible. And I just love the fact that we're bringing this out in the open. So anyone listening, I hope you just continue following Allison. And I hope you just, you know, continue to educate yourself about how it's okay to be who you are.
Well, thank you so much. I do feel like we probably could just sit and have an episode where it's like the mom talk, or just like sitting and like comparing mom
and
stories.
Look how lighter we feel,
right?
Because we released that piece of it. And we're going to feel so much better today in the mental health. We're going to walk away going, oh, I had such a nice session.
Yeah.
And my mental health feels better.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's great. So do you offer your services remotely? Yes. Do you want to tell the audience how to get in touch with you? Of course, I'll add all the links and things, but if they're listening to this in their car driving down the road, hopefully they don't type it, but they'll at least remember it's there.
So I'm all over social media in the sense that I have I have Instagram, I'm aging myself, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, LinkedIn, you know, Alignable, all sorts of stuff. So I'm doing all of that stuff. I'm all over there. I have my own website, which is www.causeandeffecttraumahealing.com. The main three things that I'm looking to do is community outreach, where I go and I work with communities to understand why we need to talk about mental health. Looking to do professional development and helping professionals, educators, therapists, psychologists, whatever, to understand how to connect the two between the learning disability and the mental health disorder, and also working with the parent and understanding what it means to have a 504, an IEP, if your child's getting, so as a parent advocate, making sure your child's getting the right accommodations, modifications, making sure the teacher's making those right accommodations and modifications, making sure they're getting the right level of support, and creating a plan, a post-secondary plan, because I was a counselor for all those years, that makes sense for where your child is at.
Right. That's wonderful. Yeah, it makes sense. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. I've absolutely loved it. And I will make sure that all of that information gets passed along too. So thank you. I am so glad that you were here.
Me too. Well, I would like to get to know you on a personal level too. So we'll have to
absolutely. Yes.